Let's start then. Welcome everybody. Here in California, here in Merced, we've been praying for the church there that you guys would be able to hold up under the very, very difficult situation there. We're so sad that you're going through that. We wish we could help more, but it's good to be here with you. Anyway, as usual, I'll start by taking questions.
Bonjour tout le monde, bienvenue à nous-mêmes dans Merced, California, nous prions pour l'église en Haïti. Nous connaissons toutes les difficultés qu'on a conduit en Haïti. L'église a prié pour nous. Et il a commencé la classe là avec des questions.
If not, then I'll just start the class, no problem. I'm sure questions will come up later. So let's start. So, last week, we discussed Calvinism and John Calvin. In many ways, Calvin is a hero of Christianity. Perhaps the greatest commentator on the Bible in history. An amazing teacher of the Bible. One who helped to restore biblical practice to Christianity. But unfortunately, like Ulrich Zwingli, he returned Christianity to Augustine, not to Jesus. Like Augustine, he overly emphasized the sovereignty of God over his other traits. And he taught the system of theology that we call Calvinism. The big word that we use for this is monergism. He believed that man was born completely and utterly depraved. And in that depraved state, we were completely incapable of responding to God's grace through faith. But God, in His sovereign will, chose a certain portion of human beings to be saved. And they are unconditionally elected. And the rest of humanity, indeed, the great majority of all humanity, are reprobate. In other words, they go to hell because God chooses that. And this led him to the horrible teaching of limited atonement.
What's that teaching?
Expiation limitée.
Expiation limitée.
Yeah. which is that Jesus died, but only for the sins of a few. The rest, too bad.
Qui veut dire que Jésus mourit seulement pour pécher un peu monde, pour te sauver un peu monde, et reste mon yo, malheureux pour yo.
He also taught irresistible grace.
Lui aussi enseigne grâce irrésistible.
And perpetual preservation of the saints.
Avec préservation finale des saints.
This is the basis of most evangelical Christianity.
Ça, c'est base, toute, chrétienté évangélique.
The chief false doctrines that we deal with, not in Catholicism, but in Protestant religion, is that you can't lose your salvation.
Qui dit que nous va perdre salut, non?
And that baptism is merely a symbol of something that God did.
Et que baptême, c'est juste un symbole de ça que bon Dieu déjà fait.
And that baptism is a work of salvation, and therefore, it's not related to salvation.
Que baptême, c'est un œuvre que lié au travail pour lui, il n'y a pas de rapport pour lui avec salut.
All this traces to John Calvin.
Tout ça qu'on va vous tracer avec John Calvin.
There are a number of Christian groups that are essentially Calvinist. Most non-Catholics are Calvinist. We will look at some exceptions later on in the class today. And by the way, don't forget, we're skipping 1 week. We'll meet again in 2 weeks. So last week we spent some time, we looked at passages which might almost seem to support the doctrine of Calvinism. But then we looked at a number of scriptures that showed that that certainly is the false interpretation. In particular, we looked at Romans chapter 8 and 9.
Particularly, we looked at Romans chapter 8 and 9.
And we discovered that predestination is a biblical doctrine.
Nous découvrons que prédestination est une doctrine biblique.
But not Calvinistic predestination.
Non pas, prédestination calvinistique.
God's predestination is that everybody should be saved.
Prédestination, bon Dieu, c'est que pour, il voulait pour tout le monde sauver.
But God gave us free will.
Mais bon Dieu, ben nous, liberté.
Thank you, God. He loved us so much. He gave us a choice.
Bon Dieu, remets-nous.
And those who choose to rebel against God, those who choose not to accept God's offer of salvation, they remain lost. Let's talk about what happened to Reformed theology and to the Calvinists.
On a parlé de ça qui arrivait de Reformed theology et Calvinisme.
Calvin's successor in Geneva was a man named Theodore Beza.
Mon qui était succédé Calvin à Genève, son homme qui était Theodore Beza.
And they say of Beza that he was more Calvinist than John Calvin.
Il dit que Théodore Beza était plus calviniste que Jean Calvin.
This is a pattern in Christianity.
Ça, c'est un pattern que nous voyons dans la chrétienté.
I described it as a pendulum, yes?
Moi, je décris comme un pendule, pas vrai?
So once we decide that our opponent is wrong,
dès que nous décidons que un opponent n'est pas correct,
we tend to go to a more extreme version of the other side of the issue.
en aller beaucoup de issues qui plus extrêmes que au Bonanois.
So Protestant Christianity in Europe by the end of the 16th century became extremely Calvinist.
Protestant en Europe na 16e siècle est devenu plus Calvinist.
And it seemed like the theologians battled to become more and more extreme.
Et notez que toute théologie ta bataille ta combat qui devient plus extrême.
There were two schools of Calvinism.
Il y a deux écoles de Calvinisme.
The supralapsarianisme and the infralapsarianisme.
De l'école Sario, c'était supralapsarianisme et infralapsarianisme.
And they had these silly debates about which was the first decree that God issued.
Et de gain aussi de débat drôle de qui ça bon Dieu qui décrète que bon Dieu ici.
We would laugh at this debate.
Nous capables rire de débat ça yo.
The supralapsarianists said that God's first decree was to send some to heaven and some to hell.
Supralapsarianisme.
Bon.
Premier décret, bon Dieu, fait c'est pour les voyer mon dans l'enfer.
The infralapsarians said no.
Infralapsarianisme, t'as dit non.
They said, first God decreed to create the universe and to create human beings.
Premier décret, bon Dieu, fait c'est pour créer l'humanité.
And then they fell into sin.
Et puis ils tombent dans le péché.
And then he decreed who would go to heaven and who would go to hell.
Et puis il fait un décret qui est-ce qui peut aller dans l'enfer, qui est-ce qui peut aller dans le ciel.
This was a more moderate position.
Position ça était plus modéré.
But in the end, it was exactly the same thing.
En effet, c'était presque même bagarre là.
Now, in a little while, I'm going to discuss the reaction against Calvinism. I'm going to talk about what's known as Arminianism. But first, I want to talk about what's known as the Catholic Reformation. As we already know, the church, the Roman church, had become very corrupt. Especially with its doctrine of purgatory and indulgences. But Luther and Zwingli were not the only ones trying to reform the Catholic Church. Many were trying to reform the church from within rather than from without. One of them was a great scholar known as Desiderius Erasmus. Erasmus. It says in this.
Yeah, Erasmus.
Yeah.
Erasmus.
This was the time that we know of as the Renaissance. I would imagine you've heard of the Renaissance. When Europe began to wake up, yes? It was the time of Michelangelo and Leonardo da Vinci. Yeah, and the time when humanism became a common philosophy. The greatest scholar of this period was Erasmus. He was a great scholar of the Greek language.
était un gros savant du langage grec.
He produced the most important Greek text of the time.
Il était produit plus gros texte grec dans ça.
He created what is known as the Textus Receptus.
Il a créé ça que le Textus Receptus.
He brought all the Greek texts available in his day and created the most accurate Greek text that was available.
Il a créé plus gros texte grec correct qui était disponible, c'est même qui a créé lui.
Of course, he believed in free will. He wrote a famous title called On the Freedom of the Will.
Freedom of the Will?
Yes. And he wrote this in the year
1524.
This was 7 years after Luther began his Reformation. In response, Luther wrote another article called On the Slavery of the Will. On the Bondage of the Will. So we see here that the Catholic Church took the correct position while the Protestants moved in a incorrect direction. His most famous writing was called On the Praise of Folly, Éloge de la Folie. This was written in the year 1509 before Luther started his Reformation. He talked about the foolishness of pilgrimages and relics and monasticism. Relics, monasticism, asceticism, worship of saints. Almost everything we think is bad about Catholicism, he told Catholics they need to reform those things. A famous statement about Erasmus is that he laid the egg that Luther hatched. On almost every point of reform, Erasmus agreed with Luther, not with the Roman Catholic Church. But Erasmus never became a Protestant. Perhaps out of fear that he would lose his reputation. Or perhaps because he disagreed over the doctrine of predestination. There was other efforts at reform. Some of the mystics at the time, such as Teresa of Avila. There were a number of mysticists, into mysticism. Such as Teresa of Avila.
Comme Thérèse de Avila.
And also John of the Cross.
Avec Jean de la Croix.
They taught many spiritual exercises.
Il t'a enseigné un pile exercice spirituel.
And spiritual disciplines.
Avec discipline spirituelle.
John of the Cross wrote the famous book, The Dark Night of the Soul.
Jean de la Croix t'a écrit The Dark Night of the Soul.
Yes.
T'a écrit un texte qui t'a titré.
Another, sorry, go ahead. Another very important reformer was Ignatius Loyola.
Ignatius Loyola.
Yes.
Loyola. Un autre réformateur, non, c'était Ignatius Loyola.
He was Spanish.
Il était espagnol.
As was Teresa of Avila.
Même Jean avec Thérèse de Avila.
And John of the Cross, they were all Spanish.
Avec Jean de la Croix, tout le monde était espagnol.
And Loyola founded the Jesuits.
Loyola et même qui était fondé groupe les jésuites.
They soon became the most powerful force within Catholic Christianity.
Yo devenu un groupe qui était puissant na catholique.
And they defended free will. Loyola wrote a book known as Spiritual Exercises.
Loyola a écrit un livre qui était titré Exercices spirituels.
Which gives great advice for how we can be more spiritual. You may have heard of the Jesuits. They did more to spread Christianity around the world than any other group. Maybe you've heard of Francis Xavier. He brought Catholic Christianity to India, to Sri Lanka. To India, to Sri Lanka, to Indonesia, to China, and to Japan.
Did you say Indonesia?
Yeah, Indonesia, to China and Japan.
Chine et Japon.
And the Jesuits helped to spread Christianity, honestly, around the entire world. It's an important point is to ask the question, were the Spanish conquest a good thing or a bad thing? At the same time that the Catholic Reformation, that the Protestant Reformation was happening, this is when Columbus came and actually visited to Santo Domingo.
Na même époque que réformation protestante a fait lancer même époque là que Christophe Colomb a fait un conquest et était visité Saint Domingue.
All of you know that Columbus came, of course, to Haiti and to Dominican Republic, yes?
Nous tous connaissons que Christophe Colomb est allé à Haïti avec la République dominicaine, pas vrai?
We could think of the Spanish conquest as the biggest disaster in history.
Nous avons pensé de conquest espagnol comme un gros désastre dans l'humanité.
Or we could think of it as the greatest victory for Christianity. It depends on your perspective.
Ou bien nous avons pensé que c'était un gros victoire que le pays pour chrétienté, ça dépend de perspective, non?
Thanks to the Jesuits and the Franciscans and the Dominicans.
Jesuits, Franciscans, and Dominicans.
Pagan religions were removed throughout at least three continents.
Les gens païens étaient enlevés presque dans cinq continents.
The despicable religions of the Aztecs and the Mayans was created with a form of, was replaced with a form of Christianity.
Religion Aztec, toute l'autre religion païenne, ils étaient venus remplacer avec religion chrétienne.
On the negative side,
non, partie négative, hein?
Tens of millions were enslaved.
Des dizaines de milliers de monde étaient en esclave.
And a massive genocide of native peoples happened. How should we think about this?
Comment peut-on penser de ça?
I let you decide.
M'a quitté nous décider.
The Spanish were brutal in their colonization of the New World. On the other hand, there were people like Bartolomé de las Casas.
Bartolomé de las Casas.
He was part of the Spanish system to colonize the New World. But he saw how horribly the natives were being abused. So he returned to Spain, to King Charles, to ask the Spanish to be more gentle towards the Indians. Eventually, he convinced the king to condemn the system of encomienda. This was the system where they enslaved the native peoples. He was named the protector of the Indians in the year
1516.
That's 1 year before Luther's Reformation. And as terrible as the genocide of the natives was under Spain, the Spanish outlawed slavery of the Native Americans. They made it illegal to make slaves out of the natives. And even at the age of 90 years old, for about the fifth or sixth time, he returned to America to protect the natives. Now, how did the Catholic Church respond to the reformers? Oh, it's so predictable. The Catholic Church was reforming itself in quite awesome ways, actually. But once Luther and Calvin formed their own Reformation, the Catholic Church swung the pendulum in the exact opposite direction. So instead of supporting the Reformation, as Erasmus suggested,
pour ta supporter Reformation Jean-Claude t'es suggéré.
They fought the Reformation in almost every way. There was the Conseil de Trent, Council of Trent. And they sought to relieve some of the excesses of medieval practices. But on the other hand, they condemned Luther and the other reformers as heretics. They confirmed the authority of non-biblical church teachings. And they confirm such teachings as purgatory and other kinds of work salvation. And they began a war to attack the Protestant countries. To try to conquer the Protestant countries.
I'm sorry?
To try to conquer the Protestant countries. Alright, but the Reformation continued. Other important people in the Reformation would include William Tyndale.
William Tyndale.
He was the first to translate the Greek and Hebrew Bible into English. He was Lutheran in his approach. But they burned him at the stake. Why? Because he translated the Bible into English. But the Reformation came to England. The Anglican Church was formed. In England, the Reformation wasn't quite as extreme. And the Anglican Church continued more Catholic practices than other Protestant churches. I actually grew up in a version of the Anglican Church. To me, it seemed like Catholicism, except with no pope. But the official theology of the Anglican Church is like Calvinism. Another important person was John Knox. He created what we call the Presbyterian Church. And he brought Calvinism to Scotland. Another movement was the Puritans in England. They tried to make the Church of England more like Calvinism. And the Puritans were the ones who helped establish the colonies in America. Okay, next person I want to talk about is Jacob Arminius. He did not live very long, actually. He died fairly young. But he started a movement against Calvinism. He was Dutch. And he was trained to be a Calvinist. In fact, he went to Geneve. To study under Theodore Beza. And he was writing a paper to defend supralapsarianism. And he was trying to defend the extreme Calvinism in there in Geneve. But in the process of his studies, he discovered that actually Calvinism is false theology. And he began to teach the exact opposite of Calvinism. He had a doctrine that's called La Grâce Prévenante. In fact, he argued directly from Romans chapter 8, verse
29.
He said, God's foreknowledge preceded his predestination. And God gave us sufficient grace so that we could decide to believe in him. He taught synergism. Remember we talked about synergism earlier? We talked about Pelagius in the 5th century. Pelagius opposed Augustine. Similarly, Arminius opposed Calvinism. He said, if we accept Calvinism and its form of predestination, if we teach unconditional election, and limited atonement.
Limited atonement.
That would mean God is the author of sin. It would mean that God is the creator of evil. And of course, Arminius was right. Arminius is a very positive figure in church history, I believe. We've already seen the pattern many times, which is that when we see somebody doing something bad, we swing the pendulum very far in the other direction. But Arminius avoided that mistake. Eventually, whole parts of the Protestant churches became Arminian rather than Calvinist.
pas seulement un pile parti devenu na protestant, na mouvement protestant devenu arminianisme que devenu calvinisme.
Ultimately, the group we call the Methodists were Arminian.
Group que nous les méthodistes étaient arminien.
Here's a question for you. Are you Arminian?
Est-ce que c'est Arminien?
Some people will accuse us of being Arminian. Now maybe you say, I have no idea, I'd never heard of that guy. But in the modern religious context, really, there's only two choices. You're either Arminian or you're Calvinist. You either believe in total depravity or you don't. You either believe in faith alone or you don't. So are you Arminian? Personally, I don't like such labels. I like to say, I don't follow Jacob Arminius. I follow Christ. I follow the Bible. But if somebody asks me, are you Arminian? I say, I'm definitely not Calvinist. So I guess by definition, yes, I'm Arminian. In 2 weeks, we'll begin to discuss the Restoration Movement. This is the movement that created the Churches of Christ. So among the Arminian churches would include our church.
So na l'église arménienne et la joine l'église panoua inclut là-dedans.
So if you're like me, you don't really appreciate such labels.
So même j'ai avec moi on va apprécier genre de titre ça.
But trust me, in the Christian debates, we are Arminian, we're not Calvinist. A great majority of all non-Catholics are Calvinist, but some are Arminian. And so Arminians believe that God has a right to ask us to respond to His grace. We don't believe in faith alone. We agree with James, who said that we're not saved by faith alone. We believe that in His grace, God gave us the ability to respond to His grace. We believe that we have free will even before we're baptized. But this still leaves a difficult question to ask. What happened to Adam and Eve? They did fall from grace, did they not? So do we believe in the fall?
Que tu es tombé? One second.
Yeah.
I can never. Oh, shoot, merci. Est-ce que nous pouvons faire la chute, là?
Just a brief thing. We're talking about this doctrine of what happened to Adam and Eve, essentially. Because surely they were different after they ate that fruit than they were before. And surely we inherited something from Adam and Eve. And I think Arminians struggle to discuss this question. So that's something for you to think about. But Arminians believe that we're not totally depraved. And yet we do inherit a sinful nature, don't
we?
Adam and Eve, they were innocent. And yet we inherited a lack of innocence. We have a sinful nature. All right, I want to talk about the next development in Christianity. And this included the group known as the Pietists.
Ça inclut un groupe qui était les Pietistes.
The Protestant religion soon became very dry. Very intellectual. It was really so much about the mind and not so much about the heart. So in the 17th century, a number of Protestant movements began. And this category of churches is known as Pietists. These are heart Christians.
Heart or hard?
Heart, H-E-A-R-T, like Christians of the heart. Because Protestant religion was religion of the mind. But not really of the heart.
Mais pas vraiment du cœur.
So Pietists emphasize Christian experience. Christian emotions. They emphasize a personal relationship with God. To the Pietist, doctrine is not so important. More important is that we have a relationship with God. The Pietist movement began principally in Germany. leaders such as August Frank. They began Bible study groups throughout Germany. Because the average Christian was finding their Christianity to not be personal. In England, a very important Pietist group began, which is known as Quakers.
In en Angleterre, j'ai créé un groupement qui était formé, c'était les Quakers.
You may have heard of the Quakers. They exist even today. They emphasize a personal religious experience. And part of their experience was they would have these shaking, their body would start shaking. That's why they became known as Quakers, because they would, their bodies would shake when they're worshiping. The Quakers do not emphasize doctrine. They emphasize, you know, having a personal feeling of God. One of the colonies in America that was founded, which is known as Pennsylvania, William Penn, who founded Pennsylvania, he was a Quaker.
William Penn, qui était fondé Pennsylvania, il était un Quaker.
So this pietist Christianity came to America as well.
Ce mouvement, ça, et qui était entré en Amérique tout.
Actually, the most important pietist branch of Christianity is the Methodists.
Actuellement, groupe de pietistes qui était entré, nous connaissons comme un méthodiste.
And they were founded by John Wesley.
Qui était fondé par John Wesley.
Eventually, the Methodists became more numerous in America.
Eventuellement, méthodistes devenus plus nombreux en Amérique.
Even than the Anglican Church.
Même un plus grand nombre que l'Église anglicaine.
But I'm getting ahead of myself. In fact, I want to talk about the Baptists. But it's time for our break. So let's take a 5-minute break. Okay.